Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 20th of November. I don't know if you had a chance to see the piece in the New York Times Sunday Magazine. It's quite fun. Sweeping the clouds away, children's TV has changed so much that a preschool classic on DVD now carries a warning. The show that we'll be talking about is Sesame Street, and our guest is Virginia Heffernan. Virginia is weekly columnist for the New York Times, and has done just a great deal of writing about television and other things. She's a graduate of Harvard, former Talk magazine editor. She's been published in Harper's, the New York Times, of course, which is where she is now, Glamour, Salon. She is writer of the Emmy-nominated documentary Matthew's Murder, and she has worked for Slate and has done work which has been called just fabulous. Well, it was last Sunday's New York Times Magazine, and it's Sweeping the Clouds Away is what we'll be talking about. And she points to what they did to us back then, you know, hardcore masonry on the dingy brownstone at 1223 Sesame Street, where closeted Ernie and Bert shared a dismal basement apartment that was deteriorating. Cookie Monster was on a fast track to diabetes. Oscar's depression was untreated. Prozac-y Elmo didn't exist. And a pretty lonely girl like Sally, this was the first episode, might find herself befriended by an older male stranger who held her hand and took her home. Gordon just wanted Sally to meet his wife and have some milk and cookies, but he could have wanted anything. As it was, he fed her milk and cookies. The milk looks dangerously whole. It's a very well-written piece, and Virginia is with us. We'll be welcoming phone calls as well as we talk about Sesame Street this hour. And here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And the email address is talk@WPR.org. Hi, Virginia.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. Thanks so much for being with us. And I read this and I almost thought, is this tongue-in-cheek or is there really a warning on these early shows? Is there really a warning?
There really is a warning.
Oh, my gosh.
The warning is given orally, so it's not on the label like a Tipper Gore kind of thing.
Yeah.
on the package. But, for every episode, either a character or a sort of, title card warning is delivered, and that the character sometimes says, this is not suitable for today's preschoolers. It's for grown-ups only. These are the first 10 years of Sesame Street are now dangerous Sammy's Dot material.
And it's not suitable for today's preschoolers. For what reason? What are the problems with these episodes?
Well, it's a number of things. And I asked the executive producer, Carolyn Parente, to walk me through the reasons that she thought that the old Sesame Street needed this warning. And she cited a number of behavioral tics, basically, in the early characters that she thought, at Sesame Street Workshop have concluded are not good models for children. As you said, Cookie Monster is a really serious overeater who can't control himself. He looks like a binge eater.
Yeah.
Probably some emotional problems lead him to that much gluttony. Oscar the Grouch never cheers up. He has not turned his life around in any way and shows no intention of getting out of his garbage can to start a better life.
You can't have that as a model, right?
No, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You got to get out of the garbage can.
Yeah, or at least dream of it. Yeah, the characters are they lack ambition. They're highly eccentric. As I say, Ernie and Bert live in a really dark basement apartment, bars on the windows, it's never quite clear not just what the relationship between them is, but how old they are. In my memory, Bert is kind of an older guy, and Ernie seems like a child. I'm not sure what they're doing in there.
Right.
Some of the other characters, some of the other small behaviors and details, also were imagined to be would upset today's preschoolers, including pipe smoking.
Oh yeah,
by the host of what they called Monsterpiece Theater. That character also eats his pipe, but somehow that was less troubling to producers than the fact that he smoked a pipe at all, which is, I guess, something that today's preschoolers shouldn't have to witness.
Right. This show was, and you mentioned this, that it was marketed for inner city children, wasn't it, back in 1969 when it first went on the air, but it it took off everywhere.
Yeah, the level of saturation that Sesame Street had in the early days on television sets is really astonishing. I mean, in Bedford Stuyvesant, a notoriously kind of rough neighborhood in Brooklyn, 95% of households with toddlers were watching it.
Wow.
In Washington, D.C., according to the research, the numbers were even higher, suggesting that just about 100% of people, families with toddlers and TV sets, were showing them Sesame Street. You know, you talk to people, I'm 38, you talk to people from Tobago, from Nigeria, from New Zealand, everybody was watching Sesame Street. It is a touchstone, you know, for virtually all of us who grew up in, in the last 30 years, which is pretty amazing. I don't know that we can say that about any children's culture now, that it will be, so universal.
Yeah. My husband was telling this funny story at the dinner table last night that I wasn't around in those years, that his son, firstborn, and my stepson watched Sesame Street. And one day he put on his coat and was going out the front door. And Mike, my husband, said, "David, where are you going?" And David said, "I'm going to Sesame Street." And then Mike said, "Well, where is Sesame Street?" And he had it identified, Appleton Avenue here in Milwaukee, which is, he was thinking of a central city part of Milwaukee, and he was going there, but it was identified. And I'm wondering if we had an identification of when we were very young, about central cities and about maybe some of the issues in central cities, and did most of us identify the place where Sesame Street was?
It's amazing because it's such a specific space. The 123 Sesame Street, that sort of brownstone stoop it's with some cosmetic changes has always been the center of the show, it's so, for people who grew up in New York City in the 70s, it brings them right back to look at those images. There's some garbage on the street, and the facades of buildings were very dirty, and the neighborhoods hadn't been gentrified, and
right,
real estate was still cheap.
Yeah.
But I didn't grow up in New York. I grew up in rural New Hampshire, and yet I had some association with that place, too, because as much as a real gritty representation of New York City streets, mean streets, it was also a kind of a place for the imagination. And the early producers managed to create what I've been thinking of as a kind of inner city, like a city that's in your interior life, that it's a place that children could imagine anything could happen, and that was ultimately, in spite of the superficial dangers, very safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that this idea that the characters were somewhat eccentric and who knew what was going on with them, that we've become perhaps a society that now is overly examining all of this, right? We become just too worried about what impressions certain kinds of things are going to make on our kids and whether or not it'll ruin them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a strong, some people I've talked to, really think that, it's Cookie Monster's voracious appetite is actually just funny and we shouldn't worry about that, or the smoking is something the kids should get to see. There's no specific idiosyncrasy that I feel that children should or shouldn't be exposed to, but it's idiosyncrasy at all that children should see, I believe, in characters, because getting a sense of how to live in an imaginary world helps you to read novels and enlivens your universe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not every character and person that a kid comes across is a protagonist with a sense of decency, and and you know, a cheerful disposition like Elmo.
Right.
A lot of the people around you, and all of us remember this from our childhood, are our weird aunts and our strange neighbor and our, you know, and
right,
getting
right.
a sense of how to interact with those characters, I think is something the early Sesame Street provided possibly better than the current one.
Yeah, interesting. You also write in your piece, nothing in the children's entertainment of today, and you describe it as candy-colored animation hopped up on computer tricks can prepare the young or the old for this frightening glimpse of simpler times. Is this a general statement, or could you say that it's pretty well true that what we got now is candy-colored animation hopped up on computer tricks?
Well, as for candy coloring, the palette has definitely changed. I mean, part of this is because we're watching on digital television sets, and even Sesame Street uses more green screen and flash animation, you know, which are you know, basically computer tricks than they used to. But the that very bright palette is so different from the really moody, bruisey kind of film noir palette almost of the early Sesame Streets. So the candy color I definitely stand behind. The move to animation also, I like live action for kids because I like the idea that kids get to see people's faces and complexions and their mouths when they move and say words. You know, in foreign countries, one thing people praise American television for is that it doesn't, sitcoms at least, do a very nice job of teaching English to non-English speakers, partly because you can see Jerry Seinfeld and people from Friends use idiomatic English, and you can see exactly how they form the words because you're looking at people's mouths.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at animation, you know, the obviously the mouth and words don't sync up, and it doesn't have that same instructive quality. I also, all the jump cutting and flash and the unnatural movements of cartoon characters, to me, is more difficult to process. You know, when you see Maria and Morgan Freeman on the early children's television network, you know, shows, they just are. They're so pleasant to watch. You know, there's some warmth to them, and there's some natural human pace to how mm-hmm. they move, and I like that.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Virginia. Virginia Heffernan is our guest. She's a columnist for the New York Times and has a piece. The medium is what she looks at, and the piece was in the Sunday magazine section just this past Sunday. Sweeping the clouds away, children's TV has changed so much that a preschool classic on DVD now carries a warning, if you can believe it. Many of you watched or your children watched Sesame Street, or you're watching it now with your children. What do you think? Was what was done to you hardcore back in 1969 and in the early years of Sesame Street? Has it all been somewhat sanitized now? And we can branch into the larger world, which I'm not very familiar with right now, but Virginia's very familiar with television, so she can look at the kind of television that we're putting forth now for children and whether or not it is terribly sanitized and there is too much animation, what it is we're looking for from children's television, and just the impact of Sesame Street, which has been on the air for such a long period of time. Is there something of value to have these characters who may overeat, you know, who are kind of quirky, who don't get out of the garbage can, life doesn't get much better for them? Does it teach us in some way about our own quirky relatives and quirky people that we need to deal with in our lives? The importance of Sesame Street in your family, or maybe you didn't put it into your family. I don't know. We'd like to hear from you. Here's our phone number. It's 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. We also have this email address that you could use, and the email is talk@wpr.org. We'll return with phone calls for Virginia Heffernan in just one moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're welcoming phone calls now for Virginia. Virginia Heffernan is our guest, and we draw your attention to the New York Times Sunday magazine, in which she wrote a piece about Sesame Street. Sweeping the clouds away, children's TV has changed so much that a preschool classic on DVD now carries a warning. And it's true, there is a warning on the volumes 1 and 2 that these early Sesame Street episodes are intended for grown-ups and may not suit the needs of today's preschool children. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And we start our calls with Dave from Appleton. Hi, Dave. Hi, Dave. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
I'm sorry, I was on hold, but I'll go ahead. I think the whole thing is very ironic because every time I take my kids to see a movie or turn on the TV, I think everything that is being addressed is totally on an adult level.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You know, and the idea that Sesame Street should be a warning there, it's so ironic. I can't even. I went to see B Movie this weekend,
yeah.
And I can't believe who wrote that and what they think that's appropriate for kids.
What specifically in B Movie stood out?
Well, the whole idea that part of the storyline revolves around a lawsuit that the bees are going to file against the humans is like, what is that? How does an 8-year-old or 6-year-old connect with that?
Right. Yeah. And introducing them early on to high stakes litigation. Yeah. How much worse or better is that for kids than you know, cookie consumption?
Yeah, right.
It's
oh,
a
that's
good
funny.
Point. I mean, what did your kids make of it? Did they?
You know, my kids look. I just looked at them, and they were kind of like they felt like they had to like it because, you know, they've heard so much about it, and you know, I don't think they really did, but they said they did. You know.
The contemporary children's movies, you know, pride themselves on working, as they say, on two levels or more than one level, so that parents won't get bored by them. But the, you know, more heavily researched educational projects like Sesame Street are really aimed at children. The small sort of gestures to include adults, you know, giving names in the early days, like Roosevelt Franklin and Wells Fargo Wells to characters, just, you know, just so that it would be identifiable to adults. I think that maybe the, you know, today's movies have taken that to an extreme, including adults to the exclusion of children.
Right. God forbid the parent would sit there and, for the benefit of the child and just not, you know, and deal with the child level entertainment, you know.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So what is your name? We just got mixed up on our phone.
John.
All right, John. Thanks, John, very much for your call.
Thank you. Thanks. Uh-huh.
Goodbye. Who decided, Virginia, that there had to be a warning on this DVD? I mean, who's responsible for that?
I think the Sesame Workshop, it's not as official as I say, as the warning, you know, the kind of rating system that you
right.
get on albums. But Sesame Workshop is extremely responsible and does an enormous amount of research every year. They even consider the almost 40-year-old franchise of Sesame Street an experiment every year.
Oh my.
They don't know, it's the longest running children's show in history, but the attitude at Sesame Workshop is we'll see if this works another year.
Oh my gosh!
And so every year they do research all over again, and in response to the research, tweak the show and sometimes seriously tweak the show. So, you know, their research for 2007 is just very different from their research for 1969.
Well, what you said, though, is so nice. They're so responsible, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They're a pretty earnest group of people. On the other hand, when they first decided to use Jim Henson's puppets, so the thing to remember is that Jim Henson, who created the Muppet characters and the soft puppets, he was making puppets before and independent of the Sesame Street franchise. So they had already decided at PBS to create an educational children's program, and Jim Henson was using those puppets for all kinds of things, selling stuff and, you know, other kinds of shows. He had no particular crusade to educate children. But the puppets were so popular in part because they were soft and not hard marionettes, which... it didn't work as well on television, on early television, that the Sesame Workshop, then the Children's Television Workshop, decided that these would make great mouthpieces for their stories and messages.
Thanks so much for the call, Dave. Our number is 800-486. No, that was John. I'm sorry. We had Dave twice here. Now we go to Dave. Hi, Dave from Appleton.
Hi, guys. Basically, what I want to throw out there is, do we feel like we're dumbing down our kids a little bit? The reason I say this is I grew up with all this stuff. I'm a very successful engineer. I have a very good job. And I came into my job with a lot of experience with this by seeing and growing up with it, with having street smarts. I feel like we're taking so much away from our kids that they come into our job so naive, so underprepared for real life because they don't have these experiences when they grow up. And I guess if a parent really is that concerned or thinks that their kid's going to have an eating disorder because they watch Cookie Monster,
right.
I'm thinking the parent's got an issue because, I mean, the kid's not thinking that when he's watching this Cookie Monster. So I guess what I'm saying is, with the few people that we've interviewed in the last year for positions at our company, that we've actually not hired a lot of them because of not having the street smarts. They're naive. It's almost like they're stupid, and they're getting dumber as the years go on.
What do you mean by that, not having street smarts?
Yeah, give some examples.
Yeah.
You can have all the book smarts you want. Mm. You can read every book, and you can take everything out of that. But if you can't apply it to the real world, you're not going to get anywhere. And I think a lot of these people that are maybe doing these studies on this are these people that have no street smarts, haven't dealt with real people. All they know are the numbers in the books.
The idea that kids today, as they say, are being sort of mollycoddled by either the new Sesame Street or other children's programming seems pretty widespread. I mean, you sound like you might be roughly in my generation. I'm 38. I hear this complaint. I mean, in among my friends that children are growing up with less a sense of how rough things can be, or poverty, or crime. I'm not sure that's true. I mean, as the earlier caller said, there's another level of sophistication being cultivated in children's entertainment, especially about these. I don't know, sort of corporate subjects. So, you know, in B-movie, there's a big lawsuit. now, that's not something a word I would have known, lawsuit, even when I was, four and five.
and yet
it's the fulcrum of the plot in a kid's movie now.
Yeah. Anything else, Dave? Dave's gone. Thanks so much for your call. We go to Derek next. Hi, Derek.
Hello.
Hi.
I guess I just have a couple comments. I guess I'm 35, and, a lot of the things that you're talking about never even crossed my mind until now that you're talking about them. Oscar the Grouch living in a garbage can didn't really seem like a big deal to me. That's where he lived, and he accepted where he was at.
Right, he accepted it.
and I guess if I was a kid and you would have pointed that out to me, I don't know that it would have been that big a deal. My nieces are into this High School Musical movie.
Right.
And I guess it's okay. They find it happy, and maybe it doesn't bother them, but everybody in that show is perfect.
Mm.
And no one really has a whole lot of character to them, and I don't really know what the repercussions of that will be, I guess hopefully that they're just children and that's just a passing phase in life, and they'll choose for themselves how they want to be when they're older, but I guess I never really even thought about the issues of Sesame Street until just now.
Until Virginia wrote the column and we did the show, I didn't
right.
think about it either. Yeah,
right.
See, wrote it,
you know, I like. I mean, the fact that you use the word "perfect" to describe the High School Musical characters, I think, is really interesting because there's no character on Sesame Street who's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
This is definitely a crowd of imperfect monsters, shaggy monsters in many cases, and characters. And, when you see, when there's a book about a character with an imperfection now, it's something pretty tame. I mean, for instance, the actress Julianne Moore has a book out now about getting used to having red hair. this is not living in a garbage can. if you're as beautiful as Julianne Moore, having red hair is probably not much of a liability. But I do think in general, I think just the new television and the new movies for children are much more aspirational. So while you could accept, as the caller said, you could accept the idea that Oscar the Grouch lived in a garbage can, that is an unacceptable state of affairs in the climate that we seem to want to give our kids now. In other words, he should always be dreaming of, you know, college and the suburbs and getting a suit on.
Thanks, Derek, very much for the call. Let's go to Sarah from Pell Lake next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I have a story and then a comment. My story is when I was two, and I'm in my early mid-30s, when I was 2 years old, I would sit down and watch Sesame Street, and they had the Wicked Witch of the West on. Mm. And it scared me so much, I hid behind the couch. So my mom called the television station, found out when it'd be on again, sat down with me and watched it with me to make sure that I was okay and that to point out who the Wicked Witch was and stuff. And I thought that was really great. And I think, you know, more parents should do that. But my comment is that it really taught acceptance. You know, like Oscar would sit there and be all grouchy and talk about, oh, you know, life sucks, whatever he'd say.
Yeah.
And then they'd walk away and go, oh, that's just Oscar. You know, they wouldn't say, oh, Oscar needs to be on Prozac and needs some serious counseling for his problems. They would say, oh, that's just Oscar. And they'd walk away, and that's how they treat everyone.
Hmm.
Oh, Cookie Monster, go get Cookie. I mean, this is my recognition, but Cookie Monster, go get a cookie. Oh, that's just Cookie Monster. It really taught to accept the people around you and be okay with people who are different. And I think that you really miss out on that if you wash it down and make everyone be okay, because not everyone is okay, and there will be people who are going to be like Oscar, who are going to be like Cookie Monster, and they have to be accepted. And I think it's sad that it's gotten to the point where you can't even do that anymore.
Is that element gone from the show now? I haven't seen the show in a long time, Virginia. Is it gone from the show now?
Oscar is still an extremely funny character, and Cookie Monster, too. Oscar, he likes things bad. He likes more garbage on the street. He wants, you know, the opposite of what other people like. So he's still a great character. But in general, the dynamic that the caller mentioned of acceptance and tolerance, which are very sort of peaceful virtues, that you might relax into the world in which you're born and get used to the people around you, not try to change them, and not even aggressively try to change yourself. That, as a virtue, has definitely declined in importance in contemporary child research, but also in contemporary society, because for fear of too much passivity among children, and in the case of the early Sesame Street, too much passivity in the so-called inner city, the show started to encourage much more, as I said, ambition and aspiration, and with that, discontent. You know, I can't live in this dark place anymore.
Right.
I've got to go somewhere else. I've got to go to Elmo's World, which, you know, launched in 1998 in the middle of the biggest bull market in American history. And everybody wanted to go to a brighter, sunnier, richer, better appointed place with Elmo as our guide.
Anything else, Sarah? Are you there, Sarah? All right, thank you so much for your interesting comments. We go next to Jane from Marinette. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm an older mom. I'm in my 50s, and my children are 12, 14, and 17. And their take on things, as witnessed by a dinner table conversation not long ago, was that Sesame Street is dumbed down and boring.
And boring.
It wasn't the same exciting show that it was when they were kids, because all the interesting, quirky personality things have been dumbed down. And I think there's a real disconnect. We do that with the preschool set, and then we turn around and sell them Bratz dolls and sexy clothes.
Right.
I mean, it's a disconnect that the Children's Workshop isn't going to fix. I like the idea that the characters, as they were created, follow through, and kids follow them, and with their kids and the kids they babysit for. And you accept that some people are quirky and some people have misfortune.
Yes.
And that seems to be missing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a it's not a relaxing show in the same way that it used to be. And to the extent that it encourages much more homogeneity in people's personalities and ambitions, it definitely could be considered to be a dumber show.
Hmm.
Although, you know, those first episodes, it's worth showing your kids Sesame Street Old School, which is, you know, on these two volumes of DVDs, just to remind yourself of exactly how strange the early episodes look to us now.
Well,
and there's some really just like slow, kind of almost like trippy sequences.
Really?
Yeah, there's one where they just show the milking of cows to the tune of a song that goes that's called "Hey Cow." very slow, late 60s song. I mean, nothing in that seems particularly street smart.
Right, right.
In fact, there's actually some serious misinformation given that is sort of much more utopian than we imagine Sesame Street in those days. The cow is said to produce milk for her calf, but she produces much more milk than the calf can drink, and so that milk is given to a dairy.
As
if there were no agribusiness or hormonal treatments or, you know, or particular ways of handling livestock that has been developed for centuries in America.
Right.
It was just an accident that the cow had some milk left over for us.
Huh. You make us want to go out and see these early episodes.
Oh,
that's
so
for sure.
It.
Yeah, it sounds like it's worth it. Thanks so much, Jane, for the call. Scott is next from Appleton. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
Hi.
I am a certified special education teacher who taught behavior disorders and social skills.
Ah,
and cool. I'm 37. I grew up on Sesame Street, and y'all have scarred me for life giving those character traits to them because I can relate to the children that I've taught in my classrooms as being similar. But
in what sense?
Well, I've had kids who've had eating disorders, and there's a lesson there. There's a lesson there that can be taught. Similarities. I always found it fun to go down into Oscar's trash can and see what his living conditions were like, because then you can let the other kids know that, see, there are worse living conditions than what you actually have, and you can appreciate what you have.
Yeah, that's interesting.
My question, though, is what about the TV show Electric Company? Have you compared that?
Electric Company is apparently soon to be out, the early episodes on DVD, but I have not seen them recently, although you can find bits of them on YouTube. Electric Company is largely seen as having kind of set the pace for that MTV style, lots of short segments, and it has it's extremely quick. Sesame Street's pretty quick, too, compared to half an hour sitcoms. The segments are, 3 minutes, 2 minutes. Electric Company,
same,
I think, took that to a higher level.
It would be the same attention span as what children actually do have.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because the original idea for Sesame Street is not all that noble. It's simply that Gene Gance Cooney noticed that people were so good at remembering what they heard on commercials. Why couldn't you create jingles and commercials that would teach numbers and letters? And so, Sesame Street can be seen as a collection of, music videos or a collection of commercials, really, for education.
Thank you so much, Scott, for your call. We go to Ray next from Milwaukee. Hello, Ray.
Good morning to you and your guests. I wanted to say I thoroughly enjoyed watching Sesame Street, and especially The Electric Company with Morgan Freeman.
Oh, yeah.
During the mid-80s with my son, he and I both enjoyed both shows immensely. We laughed at almost every show. There was something to laugh at. But what I wanted to point out was the music in both shows was very powerful, and it even affected me as an adult, I believe. I toured later as a musician around the world, and now I'm working as a stagehand here in Milwaukee, and we did Jim Henson's in the Big Blue House, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and I was just so moved by how well put together even their stage performances were, and how well they did connect with the children in a live audience, because I work spotlights for those shows. I just wanted to bring up the music aspect, and that Jim Henson was such a marvelous person. He was probably 80% of the reason Sesame Street was successful.
Yeah.
And I loved all the weird characters. I mean, not everybody is going to be a computer scientist. Somebody has to take out our garbage.
Yeah.
And I believe Oscar was, you know, whether or not he was on the low end of the poverty scale or whatever, he was still a human being. And we do have to deal with all kinds of people in our world, and not everybody is striving, you know, to have two-car garage and two wives and two divorces and 800 credit cards. Some of us are actually happy and content with where we are in life, and we don't feel we need to grab everything. Like, you know, basically the world is trying to push this consumerism on us, and I saw both of those shows as kind of anti-consumerism in a way, but it's funny you say Sesame Street was brought to us by the commercial industry. I find that really interesting.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to exaggerate that. Not the commercial industry so much as just the idea that the, you know, insidious kind of jingles of commercials that worked so well to sell soap and cars could also be maybe applied to education. So there was no commercial stake in the series early on, and even now the sponsorships, you know, even now it's a nonprofit, but the idea of using commercial like segments to sell numbers and letters is definitely part of it. But I really like what you said about, you know, not everyone's station in life, not everyone is going to live the same way. I mean, it's worth taking a look at the 1998, the Elmo's World, which started in 1998, which is just a very different show. You know, he essentially lives in what looks like a suburban house, and it's a much better appointed, I keep saying, mm-hmm. of a place. There's a lot of, you know, yes, you do get a sense that that Elmo's parents do a lot of shopping, let's just say, put it that way.
That says a lot.
Yeah.
Right there, it says a lot. More phone calls in a moment. We're speaking this hour with Virginia Heffernan, who's written a highly entertaining column in the New York Times, the Sunday Magazine section, and it's sweeping the clouds away. Children's TV has changed so much that a preschool classic on DVD, that would be Sesame Street, now carries a warning. And we're welcoming phone calls. We've had just a lot of phone response here, so if you've had a hard time getting through, try right now, 800-486-8655 or 227-2050 in Milwaukee. You could also send an email if you'd like, and that address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls now for Virginia and to Corey from Menominee Falls. Hi, Corey.
Hi.
Hi.
If you need help, hang up and then
Hello?
Call your operator.
Whoops.
328. Hello?
If you'd like to make...
Yeah, I'm sorry. We need to call our guest back. I think we've somehow lost our guest.
Hello? I'm here.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no. We've got you. We just lost Virginia. Okay. Well, go ahead. Talk.
Okay.
We'll tell her what you said.
Okay. Well, I actually am 33 today.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah. And I have a 4-year-old and a 15-month-old. And I grew up on Sesame Street as well. And I remember when I was in college, I babysat and would kind of turn it on every once in a while just to kind of see what they were doing differently. And I guess I don't necessarily think the changes that they've made are bad. I think I view it as a reflection of our society, and I don't think that's bad. I know Cookie Monster sings, we have this one video where he sings about other foods. He still eats cookies, but that's not the only thing he eats. And I mean, we talk about it. I don't think that's necessarily bad.
Mm-hmm. What else does he eat?
He drinks milk.
He drinks milk.
And then he sings about vegetables, different vegetables that match with the rap that he's singing. But I think too much of anything is bad. So there's a couple where they talk about exercise all the time, and we don't put that one on all the time because I don't think she needs to be concerned with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's bad to bring that up, because that is a concern in our society now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's why I the changes that they've made, I don't think are necessarily bad, because they are general concerns for the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's still the same Sesame Street. It
yeah.
still has the same values, the same issues that kids deal with,
mm-hmm.
about sharing and we sit down and talk about it. So any questions that she has that she might not understand. There was one episode where Oscar the Grouch was visited by, I forgot his name, but it was equivalent of Donald Trump.
Huh. I didn't see it.
And he had all his garbage, and they wanted to be his helper.
Hmm.
And so they had contests, and then he would tell them he couldn't be his helper. And then they were picked, and they didn't want his garbage because it had his name on it. They could get their own garbage. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's pretty clever.
Thanks, Corey. You missed the first part of what she said, Virginia, but she said that, you know, we're living in a different kind of society, that our concerns now are just being reflected in some of the shows, and it's not a bad thing. So the Cookie Monster, instead of just eating cookies, may do a rap about vegetables, and he's drinking milk now, too. And what's wrong with that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it would be wrong to say that the changes have been all bad. I mean, partly, you know, people just are nostalgic for exactly what we saw. But the new shows, there's some really wonderful stuff on the new shows. Some really good use of R&B. The music is their musical director is new this year or last year, and some of the music is better than ever. And I agree that the lessons are tailored to kids today in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Corey, so much for your call. We go to Wendy from Oconomowoc. Hello, Wendy.
Good morning.
Hi.
One of the things that this brought to mind was the disappearance of childhood, in that so often we seem to be instilling adult fears and adult concepts in children before they have a need to deal with them. By this I mean, we hope that our children grow up with imagination and that they can have a lighthearted childhood. We don't want them to have fears, but they shouldn't have to deal with some of the issues that maybe other children are dealing with. I work in a psychiatric hospital and with a wide range of patients. But The Disappearance of Childhood was a book that I had recently read, and it talked about how we were making children grow up too quickly. Cookie Monster eating cookies would be terrible if they were purporting that you should only eat cookies. But that he eats cookies, or that Oscar lives in a garbage can, didn't affect my children. I got off a bus one day with my child, and she looked over the railing and saw bedding down in a doorway with a teddy bear. And she'd heard about homeless people, but she was stunned, and she said, "Why is there a teddy bear?" And I said, "Well, unfortunately, sometimes children don't have a home." And she was shocked, but she never equated it that Oscar lived in a garbage can. It would never have been acceptable to her that a child lived in a garbage can. But Oscar was a different thing. He was imagination.
Yeah.
And I think it's true. We have to be with our children and help point things out, that this is imagination, this is reality. Children don't wear size zero clothing. No. Unfortunately, they sell size zero. It's an important thing to bring back childhood and keep it in perspective, and I think that's going to take something on a lot of our parts to become more aware of.
Yeah, I mean, thanks so much. That's all especially interesting about Oscar, and how does he sort of model homelessness or make sense of it for kids. One of the things that stands out in people calling in, there's a little bit of unspoken disagreement among the callers. Some of them who see it important to instill street smarts in kids, so like the engineer who called earlier, and others who think kids don't need too much realism and reality in their programming. And this is a dispute about child rearing that that has gone on as long as people have published on the subject, that maybe kids' entertainment should be fantasy, like Grimm's fairy tales, or maybe it should be hardcore reality. And Sesame Street in 1969 opted for a realist aesthetic. The idea was you had to talk to kids where they live. So people didn't live in Disney castles. They lived in broken-down apartment buildings. And, you know, it wasn't going to do anyone any good, and they weren't even going to want to learn to read if the kids they saw on television, you know, were just apple-cheeked Hansel and Gretel types. Now, of course, the Grimm's fairy tales and the other fantasies have a scary side, too. So when kids think about what they're afraid of, should they be afraid of dragons, or should they be afraid of, you know, the possibilities of a dirty neighborhood and homelessness, very real fears? So this is a debate. I mean, I certainly haven't resolved it. And I know people feel differently about it. I mean, it's interesting also to see what a child prefers, if they like escapist fantasy, or are they like a little more realism?
Yeah. An interesting point. Thanks, Wendy, for the call. And when you were talking about Ernie and Bert and what was going on with them in their dismal basement apartment, we have a fun email from Terry. Did you know Uncle Wiggily lived with Nurse Jane Fuzzy Wuzzy in the Hollow Stump Bungalow? They were neither married nor related. How many lives has this ruined?
Exactly. Well, right. Cohabitation. Certainly been on the rise since then.
It's true. My golly. We can blame them.
We got to the bottom of it.
You got it. Heather is next from Brookston. Hi, Heather.
Hi there. As I'm listening to this and thinking of all the children that I've watched over the years, I had daycare for 10 years at one point, and thinking about the 3 to 5 year olds or 2 to 5 year olds that are watching this, if you put yourself in their frame of mind when they're watching, they aren't going to have all these effects, negative effects that I can think of anyway. But what I thought about is what each of the characters had. They were content with themselves and had self-esteem and confidence, no matter how screwy, you know. And they were all compassionate. And those are pretty good qualities for anybody. And like I say, no matter how nutty they were, they all accepted that. And as a matter of fact, as I was waiting on hold, I thought, that would be a pretty good model for our political candidates to be demonstrating in some of their campaigning.
Exactly.
Right now.
They turned Pennsylvania Avenue into Sesame Street.
Right.
They probably all grew up with it, too.
Or
had children who did. Yeah. But thank you. Thank you for being on. I like the show.
Thanks, Heather. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Linda from Egg Harbor. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, you were just talking about fantasy, and I can't help but think about Disney's influence over the years. I mean, you had Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I mean, what's up with them? And, you know, they had different characters, too, Dopey and Grumpy and things along those lines. But even more importantly, how Disney portrays women as being ineffectual and subservient, waiting for a male to save them, and talk about eating disorders. Have you ever seen, you know, a Disney princess that wasn't, you know, thin and beautiful? The thing I valued about Sesame Street raising my son, and he was a toddler in the mid-1980s, and he's biracial, is their emphasis on diversity, not just different monsters of different colors, you know, to make the racial comparison, but difference in socioeconomic status. And you know, I think that we could really see a lot more ills associated with the sanitized fantasy type of portrayal than certainly Sesame Street.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the literature being published around the same time Sesame Street got started. Some of the classics include Pat the Bunny, which my two-year-old looks at periodically. And, you know, Pat the Bunny has a blonde mother and a, you know, taller, dark-haired father, and two kids, and at one point you get the pleasure of putting your finger through the book till you can put your finger in Mama's beautiful diamond ring. I'm not totally sure that that's you know, exactly what most kids are going to identify with or even be interested in.
We're out of time. What a fun hour this was, and thoughtful, too. Thanks, Virginia, very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Virginia Heffernan, and her piece is in the New York Times, the Sunday magazine section, which was just this last Sunday. The title of it is Sweeping the Clouds Away. Children's TV has changed so much that a preschool classic on DVD now carries a warning. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing the hour, to John Treader for on-air production here in Milwaukee. Tomorrow at 9 o'clock, would there be a co-presidency, Hillary and Bill, should she become president? We'll be talking about that the first hour. And we'll also, based on the very touching Sandra Day O'Connor story, look at love in old age and what happens sometimes with love among people who have Alzheimer's. So that's coming up tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.